I'm your host, David Nage. This is BaseLayer, where institutional investors come to learn about crypto.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the BaseLayer podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of ARKA, where David Nage is a principal. ARKA is not responsible and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series available for listening. The primary purpose of this podcast series is to educate and inform. The podcast series does not constitute financial advice or other professional advice or services. Please do your own research.
Today's show is sponsored by Coinbase Prime, a leading prime brokerage for digital assets. While Coinbase is widely known for its retail business, Coinbase also provides the bridge to the digital asset world for institutional investors, high net worth individuals, financial institutions, and corporate investors. Through their professional trading platform, deep and diversified liquidity, execution expertise, and Coinbase custody, one of the largest, most trusted digital asset custodians, Coinbase Prime is a solution for institutions looking to enter the digital asset markets. For more information, visit prime.coinbase.com. This is David, and this is our new episode of BaseLayer. And thank you to my friend out there, Bart Stevens from Blockchain Capital. I've been introduced to Matt Cutler, the founder and CEO at Block Native. Matt, how are you?
Great. How are you, David?
I'm doing good. About a foot and a half of snow here where I'm at, and so looking forward to the dig out further. But more importantly, I want to learn more about what you're doing there, and I know everyone else does. So we're going to be talking about things like meme pools and other things. And I love this. When you go to Block Native's website, and obviously we'll have that in the show notes, there's this amazing part right in the front where it says, "The mempool is often characterized as a dark forest, a mysterious place full of unexpected events and adversaries. Our team at Block Native is committed to illuminating the mempool and providing unrivaled transaction transparency to the ecosystem." It almost feels like J.K. Rowling wrote that, just the mysterious place, and you know, you have all these things out there. It just sounded great. So tell us, before we get too far into Block Native, where did you get the idea for it? What did you do before that? How did you get inspired to get into this world?
So believe it or not, Block Native is either the seventh or eighth startup I've been a part of, which makes me a glutton for punishment.
Yeah, you're nuts.
my very first startup was an internet company way back in 1994, long before it was fashionable to do internet companies, long before it was fashionable to do them as undergrads. And that was a company called NetGenesis. We were the first ever web analytics business. And I like to say that was a 9-year overnight success, zero to IPO. And at the time we went public, was one of the top 35 IPOs in history. My most recent startup was Collaborate.com, which was a mobile collaboration platform. And that we sold early to Cisco. That's actually why I live out here in the Bay Area. I'm from Boston originally, which also got whacked by that snowstorm. Mm-hmm. And I was an exec in Cisco's collab business for about 4 years before leaving to help found Block Native. And the reason why I got into it is all my technology companies have been fairly early in major technology transformations. And once I started to really pay attention to what was happening in blockchain, and it took me longer to tune in than I care to admit, I realized that, you know, crypto and blockchain is the most fundamental technology transformation to come along since the internet itself. And I lived through that. I built during that. And so I felt like I'd kind of seen this movie before. And, you know, I knew that if I didn't jump in and start to build in the crypto space, I would always regret it, because how often is it that someone gets two bites at this apple to build new companies and major technology transformations? And so it's been incredible fun ever since we've been doing it. And I think the most fun is still in front of us.
Love that, especially because you can say that you've seen so many sides of technology. So that's really impressive. So before we get too far into what Block Native is, as you know, we talked about this prior. This show goes out to a lot of listeners out there who are family offices, who are institutional investors, and they are just starting to acknowledge and get very interested into Bitcoin. They are starting to hear about Ethereum. And so there's this work that you're doing on mempools. And for those that need to understand what we're talking about, why don't we start there? What is a mempool and why does it matter?
Sure. And we get this question quite a bit. So mempool is somewhat of a narrow and kind of fringe element of blockchain infrastructure that governs almost everything about it, right? So it's one of these, for a long time, was kind of overlooked, wasn't really talked about, but has really come to the fore because it is so important in determining the nature of transaction behavior in blockchain-based environments. So the simplest way to think about the mempool is, you know, you do a blockchain transaction, you submit it, and then you wait a while, and then it confirms. It was a yes. So what do you think happens while you wait a while? You go, I don't really know.
You have a heart attack.
Yeah, exactly. While you're waiting, it's in the mempool. So the mempool is the pre-consensus layer of the blockchain where pending transactions go and then are disseminated through the network to be candidates for confirmation. And it turns out that to most end users, this is not something we think a lot about. It's kind of like, ever think about what happens when you swipe a credit card? Like you swipe, you wait a few seconds and it confirms, right? Turns out there's like 6 different commercial entities that are involved in every single credit card swipe. It's actually mind-bogglingly complex that all the processing that goes on during the period between which you swipe a credit card and your transaction comes back as approved. A similar set of, but very different technologically set of complexity is happening while your blockchain-based transaction is pending. And all of that complexity happens in the mempool. The mempool, again, is pre-consensus. So there's no master record of it. There's no single source of truth because it's all the things that happen before consensus is formed. There's no such thing as the mempool, believe it or not. Every single node in the network has their own unique copy of the mempool. So in the case of Ethereum, there's like 9,000 unique copies of the mempool, most of which are the same, but there's slight differences between. And many of the rules that we take for granted in blockchain-based systems, the opposite is true in the mempool. And so it's a really interesting environment, a really challenging environment, and we're trying to provide transparency here and open up access to this data so that everybody's working with the same set of information.
So we're going to go into the use cases, but I love trying to bridge this gap. You know, a lot of what you just discussed, obviously, I understand because I've been in this for a number of years. I want to try to give a real world example. So as you alluded to, it's this layer before all of these things get verified and go through the transaction process. Would you equate it to something similar where we go to an airport? I mean, before COVID, you know, we all go to an airport, we give, you know, the ticket, we go through TSA or TSA, you know, pre, whatever we use out there. And then we're all kind of huddled into an area where we're waiting for the plane. And obviously, sometimes we're waiting a lot longer than we want to, but we're waiting there for the plane. And then we all get onto the plane and we go to our destination. Is that kind of equivalent to what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it is a great analogy. And there's many analogies for the mempool. The way that I like to think about it, it's sort of you're at an event and you've placed your order at the bar. And you just have to get over to the bar to pick up your drink, right? And what you expect the mempool to be is like a flash mob. Like everyone's going to get together and we're going to wear fun outfits and we're all going to dance in this synchronized way. And then I'm going to make my way through to the bar and grab my drink as expected. And when you show up, it's not a flash mob at all. It's actually more like a mosh pit. It's this big, messy, chaotic, adversarial environment that is tricky to navigate. And if you show up expecting a flash mob and you wind up in a mosh pit, you're going to have a bad time. And so the mempool is a relatively chaotic, disordered, competitive place full of actors who don't necessarily have your best interests in mind. And this is why Ethereum is this notion of a dark forest is often associated with the world of the mempool. So it, in many ways, yes, it is sort of the waiting area before you get on to do what you want to do, but it is by no means a placid or calm area. It is a very active, very dynamic, and often, unfortunately, adversarial aspect of blockchain technology.
Right. So let's move to the use cases. Let's tell people how this is used by various different components and communities within this asset class, with this community as we have it today. So there's for traders, for builders, and for wallets. Let's start with for traders. So Block Native's global mempool platform constantly captures, normalizes, and enriches in-flight, as I said, I like that analogy, in-flight transaction data. So you get unmatched data coverage and sub-transaction resolution for both Ethereum and Bitcoin. For people who are, again, coming from this from the traditional asset world and possibly have traded equities or fixed income, talk to us about this. How is this really crucial for traders who are in this asset class, who are trading these different digital assets?
So traders are our fastest growing customer segment. And the common use cases for using mempool data in trading is you're looking at basically transactions which are going to happen and trying to understand what their likely impact is going to be and then react in kind, whether that's quickly or after the fact. So imagine if the blockchain is truth, meaning, you know, once it's written down, it's immutable, it's not going to change. You can sort of take it to the bank, if you will, to use a mixed metaphor there. All future truth is in the mempool. And literally looking at the mempool, you can look into the future of what's going to happen. In the case of Bitcoin, it's up to 10 minutes into the future. In the case of Ethereum, it's on average 15 seconds into the future. And in the world of computing systems, those are both very long periods of time. Mm-hmm. So having foreknowledge of what's likely to occur will then inform trading strategies, will then inform defensive positions, will then inform, you know, threats emerging. And so traders are very active in leveraging mempool data to power algorithmic trading strategies, to monitor trades that are in motion, to make sure that others aren't reacting in negative fashions, just to keep track of what's going on. One of the most common use cases for what we do is just reducing transaction anxiety, because I can have visibility into the status of my transaction as it moves throughout every stage of its life cycle. So that's Block Native for traders, or mempool for traders.
Right. So I'm curious, would you almost equate that, or do you think traders and those that are active in this asset class would almost use that to get a sense of health of the network and the chain as well too?
Well, absolutely. You would look at mempool data to understand general levels of congestion. So there's periods where the network is relatively quiet and it's cheap to conduct transactions and there's not a lot of competition. And there's periods of lots of transaction volume, network congestion, high competition for settlement, and transaction fees go up. And so just like any market, including the stock market, you have low volume days and high volume days. Mm-hmm. In the worlds of public blockchain networks, high volume days adversely impact transaction performance, transaction predictability, transaction resilience. And so leveraging mempool data helps you have a more predictable, reliable transaction experience. And again, if you're a trader, if you're moving real value around, you have the implicit expectation that once you decide to make a trade, it's going to go the way that you expect. Understanding mempool data helps ensure that will be, in fact, be the case.
And so as you and I both know, but people out there are just starting to learn that with the advent, and I say advent, even though DeFi has now been around for more than a year, but it really started to take shape this year. With the advent and the interest, and I think that also went hand in hand with COVID and everyone being home and kind of wanting that gamification that they were used to in their lives. That's another subject for another time to talk about, even though I have already. But we saw that Ethereum was getting congested, that pending transactions were building up, and that gas, the little added kind of price that someone would pay to get their transaction done ahead of the curve went up. And so would you say over the year that you guys have been at this and you've been looking at that data, would you say there was any specific time over the course of the last almost 12 months now that we're in 2020 that there have been periodicities where you've seen this happen more often than less?
Oh, yeah, totally. So there are various events on the Ethereum network where you had exceptionally high levels of network congestion that created difficult environments to get trades done. Probably the best well-known is March 13th, which is commonly referred to as Black Thursday. Mm-hmm. And it was a period of exceptionally high network congestion and outside of or inside of which there was a weird situation where about $8.3 million of MakerDAO CDP loans were liquidated for free, for zero cost. And that resulted in then $28 million of lawsuits and over $250 million of market cap reduction in the underlying MKR token. And we did a bunch of research, actually Blockchain Native published on this, that there were some mempool shenanigans going on that would appear to have exacerbated that situation and created the conditions by which these zero bid auctions could win. So that's one. During DeFi summer, so over the course of the summer, the whole DeFi category exploded with the yield farming craze. And that just created huge escalation in gas price. And so it became exceptionally cost prohibitive to conduct quote unquote normal transactions. They're just too expensive to do anything other than high value trades in DeFi. And I think that these incidents are part of the growing process of these public blockchain networks and also are creating all sorts of new techniques, solutions, and quite frankly, improvements in the protocol to ensure a more stable fee marketplace and to make it a more consistent transaction experience. So it's interesting to see you have supply and demand. And at the end of the day, you know, any public blockchain network has a fixed supply of block space of confirmed transactions. And in today's environment, you have ever-growing demand for that space, and that means prices go up. Yep. So it's a pretty interesting environment to operate within and one that we certainly recommend folks be familiar with.
I almost equate you guys to the operators of the flight traffic control folks who are basically just looking at all the planes that are coming in and kind of you're not necessarily shuffling people around. You're not doing that. That's not part of what you do. But you have that type of data where you can see where all the congestion is. You can see where you might need to circle planes around a little bit more. You can give all that. It's very interesting. And I say this because, again, I want to state this. I've been saying this a lot lately. We didn't have this kind of analysis 2 years ago. And this is important. Because everyone's been saying, well, this feels like 2017 again. You know, obviously, Bitcoin is over $22,000, and we've had a parabolic rise over the last few days. This feels like 2017 again. No, it doesn't. Why? Because people like Matt and, you know, companies like Block Native are out there that are providing such richer analysis that we never had in 2017. We couldn't substantiate a lot of the activity that was happening out there. And so I just want people to acknowledge that the data and the analysis that Block Native and companies like it are providing were not there 2 years ago, and we just didn't have the ability to analyze the things that we do today. And that's why so many people have higher conviction rates today than they did 2 years ago. So just keep that in mind when you're listening. I want to talk about Mempool Explorer. So detecting when $10,000 of liquidity begins to move in and out or is of a specific protocol, knowing anytime your smart contract is party to a pending transaction. Why is this important? Why should people really pay attention to what you built there?
So Mempool Explorer is a relatively new product line for us that basically is a visual environment for authoring mempool data streams. And what we'd found in working with our customers is mempool data is pretty abstract. It's sort of hard to wrap one's mind around. Mm-hmm. And there were all, you know, sort of varying degrees of sophistication, both in terms in the marketplace of understanding this data and ability to work with it. And so up until this point, we're providing an API that was very powerful, but you really needed to understand the nature of the data and how it worked to get the most value out of it. So we built, it started out relatively small and has turned into quite a rich front-end experience, an environment to make it much easier to work with this data and to sort of point and click and build data streams and be able to get insights into what's going on specific wallet addresses, whether they're your own or a whole collection of them, and in particular, smart contracts, so you can monitor protocols directly. And this, without question, was sort of a transformative moment for our business when we introduced Mempool Explorer. And literally, our business has been growing like wildfire ever since, because you could literally feel the light bulbs pop off over our customers' head when they went, oh, now I get it. Now I understand how to work with this data and what I can do with it. So if you out there are curious about mempool data, I really encourage you to check out Mempool Explorer. It's free to get started. And the simplest thing to do is just monitor your own hot wallet. So if you use MetaMask or equivalent, you can just click and connect your wallet. And then Mempool Explorer will actually show you every transaction state change involving your wallet address. So when you're out there yield farming, every time you initiate a transaction, you'll get a message in Mempool Explorer. Every time that those transactions confirm, you'll know right away. If anyone sends you value, if you're on the receiving end, you'll get a notification as well. And basically, Mempool Explorer works on top of our underlying API. So it's actually pretty easy to then take that data and push it right into something like Slack or Discord. So you can be, you know, out walking your dog and your phone will light up saying, hey, you have an inbound transaction coming your way. And we hear from folks regularly that these sorts of pieces of feedback and monitoring just tremendously reduce the transaction anxiety, which is a natural part of working in the space because you're moving, you know, digital money around. You can do much more sophisticated things with Mempool Explorer, monitoring specific DEXs like Uniswap for inflows and outflows in specific liquidity pools above or below certain amounts or with certain structure, so that you can then, you know, trigger other actions, whether it's a buy activity or a sell activity or something else. Right. And so Mempool Explorer really is this way to unlock all the value of working with live mempool data in a way that is approachable for by mere mortals, not only the most elite developers in the ecosystem.
That's awesome. So as we're ramping down to the end of 2020, which has obviously been a very big year for adoption and interest in this asset class, what should we be looking out for? What are the things on the docket for 2021 that we should be looking for from you guys?
Oh, from us. So in many ways, we're just getting started. We actually just introduced a brand new product that we call Gas Platform, which is basically gas price estimation and block prediction powered by mempool data. Mm-hmm. So if you're someone who's active in the space and you're always concerned that you're either underpaying or overpaying your transaction fees, it's a Goldilocks problem, right? If you underpay, then your transaction takes a long time to confirm and you have really low levels of predictability associated with your transaction. You can block your wallets. It's a huge pain in the neck. Mm-hmm. Or if you overpay, you just basically eat into your profitability because it doesn't go any faster if you overpay versus what the current market rate is. And historically, it's been very difficult to get insight into the set of transactions that are currently in the mempool and how they impact pricing and sort of thresholds to be in the next block. And we just introduced Gas Platform that basically makes that trivial to do. We have a whole bunch of interesting capabilities in our pipeline. Right now, we're actually testing live transaction tracing or simulation. Mm-hmm. So there's an aspect of Ethereum called internal transactions. And what we basically do is we model and simulate those on the fly. And so that's another source of input for both protocols and traders. We have this massive archive of data that we've never made public. To give you a sense of how massive it is, our archive stored over 10 billion Ethereum mempool events in the month of October alone. Wow. That's on average more than 4,000 events per second.
Wow.
And so you can go back in time and look up specific transactions and understand how they behaved. You can understand what other transactions were competing for the same block space at the same time. You can build ML models for trading strategies. You can test certain conditions with that. So we'll be coming out with archive access. And we have a whole bunch more in our roadmap. So we recently closed $5 million in new financing led by Blockchain Capital, as you mentioned, but also with Coinbase Ventures, IDEO Colab Ventures, Industry Ventures, and our existing backers, Foundry Ventures or Foundry Group. And we're hiring like mad. So we are hiring developers. We're hiring go-to-market people just as fast as we can find them because we have so much to build and quite frankly, so much demand for what we're doing. So it's a fun and very intense time here at Block Native.
That is awesome. Congratulations on the raise. Some exceptional investors, as I mentioned before in there. And again, as I alluded to in the middle of the show, this is information and analysis and data that we just didn't have as an industry a few years ago. And so the ability to have that kind of discovery, not just price discovery, but the underpinning of what is actually deriving value in those different networks is incredibly valuable. You know, people have always criticized, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and others out there for a lack of intrinsic value. Well, guess what? These networks are being used. They're being used for transactions. That is part of the intrinsic value there, people. And so that kind of information is incredibly valuable, and that's why Matt and his team are doing so well. Matt, thank you for coming on the show. We'll have you back on in a few months and catch up with you.
David, thanks so much. Everyone be safe out there. Happy holidays, and looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Thanks for listening in to BaseLayer. If you like the show and all the different guests that we've brought on, please give a like and subscribe on Apple or Spotify or wherever you do listen to the podcast. Also, if you want to have a conversation or reach out to me, you can reach me out on Twitter at David J. Nage, and let's talk there. Or also you can find me on LinkedIn, and I look forward to having great conversations with you all about digital assets. This podcast is presented by Blockworks Group, one of the best digital asset event and media production companies that I know of. For exclusive content and events that provide insight into digital assets, visit them at blockworksgroup.io. You won't be disappointed.